civil authorities in your area have reported that the bodies of the dead are rising from their graves and attacking the living. Follow the messages on screen that will be updated as information becomes available. Do not attempt to approach or apprehend these bodies as they are considered extremely dangerous. I repeat, civil authorities in your area have reported that the bodies of the dead are rising from their graves and attacking the living. Follow the messages on screen that will be updated as information becomes available. Do not attempt to approach or apprehend these bodies as they are considered extremely dangerous. This warning applies to all areas receiving this broadcast. Follow the messages on screen that will be updated as information becomes available. This station will now cease transmission, so please use your battery-powered radio. Tune in to 9:20 a.m. for further information.
This is Episode 7 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell for February 17th, 2013. Just a reminder, the thoughts and opinions I express on this podcast are mine and do not represent my employer, whoever that might be. I ask everybody who finds this podcast useful, please get on iTunes and give me a rating. Follow me on Twitter at DefensiveSec. And if you so choose, send me feedback, ideas, comments, questions to info@defensivesecurity.org. You can find the podcast and show notes at www.defensivesecurity.org. So let's start with the news. As you've heard, zombies are attacking in Montana, or at least that is the outcome of a hack of the EAS system at a Montana TV station. It's fairly interesting to see the mad rush to point fingers at different vendors of technology and maintainers of technology. For instance, one article I read indicated that security is too hard for smaller TV stations. And you know, basically, what do you expect to have happen? We can't expect these people all to have different passwords. Anyway, security is not always funny. It was this time. Certainly, you could see how this could be used for not humorous purposes and potentially cause loss of life if it were used improperly at the wrong time. All right, moving on. There is a new PDF exploit. This is a fairly bad one. It's actually being actively exploited. We're expecting a patch relatively soon, from what I understand. The interesting thing here is that there actually is a method to protect against this built into PDF Viewer, but it's not enabled by default. You have to go into the settings and enable protected view. Basically, this exploit uses a vulnerability where some JavaScript inside the PDF is run. Next up are some reports from Alien Vault and FireEye about a recent spear phishing attack that uses the Flash vulnerability from a couple of weeks ago. These were a little bit interesting in that they appeared to be fairly targeted at a specific group of people. One of the email attachments that contained the exploit was a schedule for an IEEE conference. So clearly it was targeted to a specific group of people. The attachment was a Word document that contained a Flash object embedded in it. There's since been a patch for that Flash vulnerability, but it definitely does look like some damage was done. Next up, the McAfee portal was defaced. No word yet on how the attack was carried out, but we'll follow up if we hear anything. All right, the next story is regarding the President of the United States issuing what is called Presidential Policy Directive 21. This is a executive order that does a couple of interesting things for U.S. Companies. The major thing it does is order the government to take a analysis of what critical infrastructure actually is and what companies are involved in managing critical infrastructure, and by extension, if a particular company were to be negatively impacted, does that rise to the level of a national emergency? And in the cases that a company like that does, those companies are strongly urged to follow a set of guidelines that will also be developed to help manage their cyber risk, as it were. There's a lot of consternation about this order right now, but it's not necessarily unexpected. I'd say the major concern a lot of people have is that the Department of Homeland Security, the people that bring you the TSA, are responsible for running the majority of the different verticals in this program. Now, it's also interesting that even if you are nominated as a critical infrastructure company, the requirements aren't compulsory. You don't actually have to comply with them. However, it is going to be strongly recommended that you do. And my expectation is that it'll be difficult to do business in some respects if you don't. Okay, moving on. Lockheed Martin described its response to the attempted attack after the RSA hack a couple years ago. Just to refresher, RSA, who makes the secure ID tokens for two-factor authentication, was hacked, and at the time it was very strongly believed that the attackers were actually not targeting RSA directly. They were using RSA as a method of getting into Lockheed Martin, who, as you probably know, is a defense contractor here in the U.S. So Lockheed says that they actually saw some legitimate-looking people entering their network with legitimate access credentials after the RSA breach, but their intrusion defense system kicked in and prevented any data from being exfiltrated. There was quite a lot of buzz about what Lockheed is calling their kill chain. And I'll definitely say it sounds fairly sophisticated. However, I think Lockheed has spent quite a lot of money and built this very much around their particular infrastructure. And while there might be some interesting lessons to learn, you know, most of us aren't defense contractors and don't value information to the depth that they do. So certainly if more details come out about how their system works, I'm going to be the first to talk about it. But for now, I'm not Lockheed Martin, and you probably aren't either. Next article is about Facebook announcing that it was hacked. It seems like everybody these days is being hacked by very sophisticated and advanced attackers. You know, I continue to say these attacks, in this one included, really are not necessarily evidence of sophistication. And by sophistication, we mean foreign governments, and more specifically, the Chinese government. However, unlike some companies, Facebook isn't coming out and saying it was China, which is, I think, good. But they did actually give some interesting details about the breach and how they caught it and what they did. And that's what I want to talk about. So Facebook noticed the breach because they monitor their DNS queries, probably by using some service looking for known botnet CNC host domains. In any event, their monitoring system turned up a couple of hits. They tracked those back to a workstation. They did a forensic analysis and found out that there was indeed some malware that hadn't been detected. And these indeed were fully patched computers with antivirus on them. In the investigation, what they found was that this system and a number of other systems, I guess in the same work group, became infected when they visited a mobile developer website. And by the way, there's a lot of speculation about what development website that was. Anyway, some website on the internet was compromised and serving up a Java exploit, which was then delivering some malware. So this actually preceded the latest Java patch. Facebook notified Oracle about this, but apparently Oracle actually already knew about this, and Facebook's prompting apparently urged Oracle to release the Java patch a little sooner than they were otherwise expecting to. So I have to say, I think this is a really interesting case to talk about what someone did right. Now, I know Facebook is taking some heat because they waited a long time before they told anybody about the attack. And also there's some hesitation and unhappiness about Facebook's statement that no data was stolen. However, you know, I think we can all agree that they actually did do some things right. You know, first is they had some proactive monitoring in place that actually pointed them to a system that was infected with malware that wasn't otherwise detectable. You know, that's really good. I have seen a number of different companies who I would say are fairly sophisticated security-wise do some kind of DNS monitoring. And certainly if you don't do that, I would urge you to take a look at it. Next thing is they actually pay attention to their proactive monitoring. I have seen quite a few people, as I said, have things like DNS monitoring and some more advanced monitoring in place, but they don't actually pay attention to it. And the third thing I think they did right was being able to track back to the actual system that was compromised. I know it sounds like a simple thing, especially when you get into a larger companies, this becomes harder and harder to do. And the fact that Facebook was able to do this pretty effectively, I give them kudos. It shows they do have some discipline, or maybe they got lucky. I like to hope they have some discipline. Next is they took this infection seriously. They didn't just send out a help desk tech to reimage the system. They actually had some forensic and malware resources on hand, pick this apart, find out that this was the result of a Java Zero Day. It was some malware that was previously not detectable. They found that there were other systems compromised in the same way on their network, and they were very responsible in reporting this to Oracle. And then the last thing I think they did very well is that they practiced this. That's really the hallmark of a fairly mature organization, to be able to say that, you know, you have practiced similar kinds of things in drills, and those enabled you to respond quicker, more effectively, and that appears to be what happened here. So again, you know, hats off to Facebook. I often don't have a lot of kind things to say about Facebook as an entity, but, you know, I think they did very well here. All right, the last story I want to talk about is an interesting article I saw on the internet called 13 IT Security Myths Debunked, and boy, do I have some opinions about these. Okay, myth number one, antivirus is protecting you against malware in an efficient way. And the text there basically says the reason most people run antivirus is because your auditors would freak out if you didn't run antivirus. And the reality is that it's not effective because your attackers are actually testing it out before they target you. And my retort to that is, you know, absolutely, it's true that targeted attacks are not going to be picked up because the targeted attackers are going to test their malware on the AV that you're using before they send it to you. Otherwise, it's all for naught. However, I challenge anybody that has this opinion about antivirus, go look at your console logs. Look at how many hits you have and tell me it's a good idea to take it out, right? It's not. Antivirus is still fairly important. I think we can have a good debate about whether the value proposition for antivirus has materially changed relative to what it used to be, and whether we can justify the expense that we currently do. But as a control, it still absolutely has a place as well. Once you find that you are a victim of an attack, it provides you a very effective mitigation means and a way to clamp down on newly discovered variants in your environment. All right, next myth is that governments create the most powerful cyber attacks. And I think we can kind of see where that one's going. You know, the reality is I definitely agree with the sentiment. However, it's not deniable that governments are creating very sophisticated, I dare say it, cyber weapons. There, I said it. I'm not proud of myself. But these people and these governments do have some fairly deep resources and the ability to create new mechanisms that, you know, other people don't. Look at Stuxnet and some of the more sophisticated things, which are very novel, right? They're not necessarily deeply sophisticated, but they're novel in the way they work. So, you know, I'm kind of split on this one. However, if you were to say, you know, the average APT, in quotes, doesn't need to have originated from a government, I am fully behind that sentiment. All right, myth number three, all of our accounts in Active Directory are under control. Active Directory definitely gives you a very centralized place to manage your IDs across the enterprise. But the point here is there's IDs that don't get managed by Active Directory, and those are often the ones you have to worry about. Things like application IDs, things like SSH keys, and many other service IDs, embedded IDs, those sorts of things that are out of sight, out of mind. They typically don't appear on people's radar. They're not being changed. They're not being managed, so on and so forth. And to that, I agree with. The other thing I'd say is, you know, I'm not necessarily a security neophyte. I've been doing this for a little while, but I've recently gotten very interested in the types of attacks that Active Directory are vulnerable to. And I have to tell you, if I had hair, it'd be curled. It is very scary how Active Directory can be a very clean enabler for an attacker to actually get in and move around very easily inside your network. And from that perspective, I have to say anybody really needs to take a very close look at their environment and if they've got things protected the way it needs to be, and be careful. That's a lot of power, and it is being attacked over and over again. You know, most of the more complicated and successful attacks we've been seeing with a lot of these environments like the state of South Carolina and some of the others are really using Active Directory to get in, use some pass the hash, cache credential type attacks and pivot around inside the organization. The next myth is that risk management techniques are needed for IT security. I take this one to task because whether you know it or not, if you are in the IT security field, you are doing risk management. And the question really is, are you doing risk management consciously and overtly, or are you doing it without really thinking about it? And in some cases, there's not a lot to think about, right? So if you have a blank slate, anything you do just about is going to make an improvement. However, most of us don't live in that world. We need to prioritize our spending and whatnot. I think what the article is really complaining about here is the many different methodologies for risk management that require you to compile all of your assets and rate them and, you know, determine which assets are more important than others when, in fact, you really feel like most of the assets are important and ought to be treated appropriately. But realistically, I think most people, most organizations are actually doing some prioritization. You know, think about whether you patch your internet-facing servers more quickly than lab systems, as an example. You know, that is some risk management there. The question now gets into, I think, more deeply, do we spend money over here or over here, given what we are faced with, you know, in total, as well as what controls we have in place and what technology we use. You know, the one thing that I definitely really have a hard time with in the article about this is that the person quoted says, the only practice that will actually improve an enterprise's ability to counter targeted attacks is threat management, which entails deep understanding of adversaries and their targets and methodologies. You know, that's true to a point. However, most of us aren't necessarily specifically fighting targeted attacks. You know, the reality is targeted attacks generally use common tactics. Sometimes they are using more sophisticated tactics, but I think quite often organizations make it very easy to the point where attackers don't actually require using complicated attacks. Security myth number six, there are best practices for application security. I'm not entirely sure where this one's coming from. You know, I think we can all agree that there are indeed best practices. Maybe they're not to the level of maturity that they need to be, but absolutely there are best practices on how to avoid common application programming problems that result in cross-site scripting, encryption vulnerabilities, and so many other things. Myth number six, zero-day exploits are a factor of life and impossible to predict or effectively respond to. I actually agree with this one pretty well. To a point, you really ought to be thinking in terms that the software that you are using, whatever it might be, may indeed at some point be found to be vulnerable to something and in fact being exploited inside your organization, and that might require you to take some drastic steps. And I think the point here is it really pays to think those things through before your back is against the wall. Next myth, the U.S. electric grid is well protected under the North American Electric Reliability Corp's critical infrastructure protection requirements. Yeah, I think this one has been done to death. It's SCADA, 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 air gaps, haha. It's vulnerable. We don't know how bad it is yet, but someday when the lights go out, we'll probably figure it out. Although I definitely think a lot of the people who are running around telling doom probably have something to sell. Myth number eight, I'm compliant, therefore I'm secure. This is actually a mantra I am taking up within my own organization, which is very large. A lot of companies, especially smaller, even up into the larger companies, tend to think in terms of policy and guidelines are the path to righteousness. And if we are PCI compliant, we're secure. That's kind of end of job, when in fact it's not end of job. How many people who are PCI compliant get breached? How many banks who are FFIEC regulated get breached? How many organizations who are managed by the HIPAA regulations get breached? You know, that is not a panacea. You really still have to take a look at your organization, understand what your risks are, make sure you have the right kinds of controls in place. You can't get around it. The next myth is that security is the responsibility of the CISO. I gotta tell you, I've never heard this myth. I think most organizations realize that security is everybody's problem. Maybe some more than others. Definitely down at the user level and maybe lower levels in the organization, they may have a different view. In particular, I guess if I think about this some, there is a perception that the technologies that are deployed are what's intended to keep the environment secure and not actually people's responsibility as far as their actions go. So beyond that, I think it's fairly well accepted these days that security isn't strictly the CISO's job. Next myth, you're safer on your mobile device than on a computer. This is true to an extent. However, I think if you were to actually look at some of the mobile devices, you would actually see that there are less attacks, for instance, on iOS than really any other platform. Now, I think maybe what's intended here is that people on iOS are but a 0 day away from all hell breaking loose. So I do agree with that. I don't agree that you're necessarily more secure or less secure depending on the device you're using. It just depends, and the risk profile is different. Myth number 12, point-in-time security is all you need to stop malware. I really get the sense that the author of this was looking for a way to get to 13 bullet points, and I've never heard anyone say point-in-time security is all you need to stop malware, so I'm not going to talk a lot about that one. And the final myth, with the right protection, attackers can be kept out. You know, can't argue with that. All right, the last thing I wanted to talk about goes back to Java. One of the listeners of the show, Nick, sent in an email and pointed out how he's handling this problem with Java. Apparently, they don't run Java on their actual workstations, and they have a virtual desktop environment where they actually have some business applications like Java embedded in those images in their desktop cloud, as it were, are locked down so they can't talk to potentially malicious websites on the outside that might leverage future Java 0 days. I think it's a really good idea, and it's something that I've been looking at within my own organization. It does bring its own set of challenges. However, it also solves a lot of other challenges and allows you some fairly clean ways to implement some more advanced controls without actually having to re-engineer your entire company's network. But the net is, especially with something like Java, where you have a burning business need to continue running it, but at the same time, we know that it's very likely to continue to be a major avenue of exploitation. It really makes sense to look for some creative solutions like what Nick described to mitigate the problem. Anyway, that is it for this week. I hope you all enjoyed this. Again, as I mentioned before, follow us on Twitter at DefensiveSec. The show notes are at www.defensivesecurity.org. And I will look forward to talking to you again next week. Have a great one. Bye.